idea. Well, maybe that's it.
Oh, thank you. So I guess my basic question is, did I lose you? I feel like maybe I didn't get my concept across that I wanted you to have some background and tools to do interpretation as we see things, and I'm going to try to show part of that point real quickly and then talk about the end of the world. Ready?
I think that at the very beginning, if you had more clearly stated what your purpose was in showing us those things, it would have been easier to follow why you were doing what you were doing.
Yeah. And I know that as I try to do something with this in the future, I need to have it, of course, better organized. I don't want to be connected to any network. So that I can cut down the amount of time that I spend in those kinds of things. I want to take it to Chichen Itza. That evidently isn't what I thought it was. So I got to find documents. Doing something. Once again, part of it was for the skill, as you see the signs, to be able to interpret those signs, and that was the basic idea. And I don't think I gave you too much of that, but I appreciate your willingness to listen to me and to try and to help me through it. So if you have other suggestions and ideas, and I appreciate what Betty said, because you know, maybe that's one of the things I need to do. Let me do this. I think I did some things on. Did we do much on numbers yesterday?
A little bit.
Okay. Difficult talking to do this at the same time. I can get this together. There are all kinds of symbols, and we see those symbols, and the idea is to have some concept of the meaning of those. So. As we see them, I gave some examples yesterday that, we know the number 7 number 6 is the number of man. That's why 666 is a bad number, because it triple man. 7 is the number of completion, it's perfect, it's the completion of the creation, it's the seventh day of rest, and 8 is a new beginning. And so, just as, 2 has significant meanings, as it says on the screen, that, John says God and Christ are 2, but also 1. And so 2 is a good thing. 2 are better than 1 in Ecclesiastes. Faith without works is dead. There's a complementary kind of thing for everything. Husband and wife and the creation of children. I like the one, a key's no good without a lock. I got a key, I can't find the lock. I might have had that. I don't know where this goes. Or I got the lock and I can't find the key. 0 times 0 is still 0. It's nothing. We have body and spirit. So there's a lot of divinity in things like dualities. I thought there were some interesting things in comparisons with Joseph. Had a life of dualities, 2 dreams, 2 rebukes. Jacob worked for 2 wives, 7 for Rachel and 7 for Leah. I hadn't heard this one. He had Joseph for 17 years, especially 17 years before losing him to Egypt and 17 years before losing him in Canaan. And I I wasn't sure of that. I need to do more research again. But then we come to three. And three is special because it's a triangle, and it can encompass things. And so when we see on the walls of ancient civilizations things that, when we see triangles, then I hope in our minds we'll be able to say, okay, I see some of the meaning beyond that. And when someone explains it, sometimes you have tour guides in other countries when you go on those tours, and they explain all kinds of things. I remember going to Teotihuacan and telling us how they did the sacrifices down the stairs and things. It was a big farce. They didn't do that in Teotihuacan. It was an ancient city. That was an Olmec city. The Aztecs might have done a few out there, but mostly they went out there to bury the dead, and they did the sacrifices back in Tenochtitlan, in the main city. So it gives you some criteria to judge those things that people tell you. Anyway, the two lines can't contain anything, whereas a triangle can, and that's a nice thing. Any one thing requires at least two other things, one to sustain and one to counter. And so we have, marriage. Three exists in the three laws. And who was it brought up something about 333? Yes. Thank you, brother. And those things at times come through with some significance, and we need to recognize them. There is a Godhead. There's a whole lot in there, and I won't go over that. Three in marriage, creation on the third day, the waters were gathered, crucifixion in the third hour, resurrection the third day. 3 months into the Exodus, Moses went to Sinai again. And I said, I got to read that. I didn't get time to go back and read it. Three times a year, Hebrew males required to go to the temple to renew the covenant. The shofar gets three blasts in Rosh Hashanah, which this year is coming at a bad time. There are laws of shapes, and I think I mentioned some of those things yesterday quickly. I don't know that I went through the whole thing. I like the square, because the square turned upside down is the same. It's the parallel, it's synonymous. It's that perfect thing. I guess we did, because we talked about the circle and how that, for doing construction, that the reason the square is used mostly in construction to save material is because it is perfect to a circle. Oh. I thought we did. Yeah, Levi turned it on for me. Yeah, the light's on. And now that part's recorded. But thank you. Well, okay, that takes care of that. So, that was four. Let me see what I have in five, because I don't even know what I put in there. I didn't get anything in that. I don't think I did in six. So let's go to another country. And I can find everything. When you hook this up to the machine, it rearranges the entire desktop and everything won't fit. And so it layers some of the icons. And I can't find the icon. Let's see. Yeah. By the way, on my computer I have, it has about 300. I think you're right. I have 300 gig of memory on it, and I have about 5 left. I need a new computer, but my wife won't let me get one.
I didn't figure it out.
Okay. Let's see. I'm doing this. Did a little mission trip, and I did two. One with Charles Zur, and one with Arturo, and went to Cuba. And on this one, this is an interesting thing. now. Can you see that okay? That's okay. It's actually better for me to hold it, probably. Well,
higher.
All right. You may be right. Thank you. That's good. Thank you, Steve, very much. Yeah, okay. My arm feels better. Thank you. Do you know where we are? And I wish I could make it full screen, but that is full screen in this mode. Huh?
And turn it sideways towards the fantasy. Turn the stand the way you work.
Like this.
No. It's your body. So I went to visit a family there. This is Claudia and Sofia, and their husband and wife. Long story on that, and you want to hear it someday, I'll tell you that testimony, but there's your husband and wife, living with Sofia, who's now eight years old. And they have a nice little home. This was in Cancun, because that's how we flew them to get out. And that's their little kitchen. She now lives over north of Mexico City. There are little things like little supermarkets. Remember in the old days when every neighborhood had a supermarket? That's the way it is in other countries. They have these little supermarkets. It's neat. You just walk down there and you don't get everything, but you get all the necessities. Yeah, this is Walmart neighborhood market.
They know how much I love to go to Walmart, so I got down the parking lot and got a bottle, and I thought it was about cracked up.
she stayed with us and went to school and learned English. I'm going to pass right past that stuff. I just wanted to show you how I got there. And they took me to a place that I'd never been before. It's nearby. And I was very appreciative. And it was a place. It's a sign on the highway. It's not Chichen Itza. It's Chichen Itza. Okay, and the accent march had to follow. Chichen Itza was a lowland city. How many of you have been there? And it's a lowland city. It's in the Book of Mormon, when they say we went up, we went down. They didn't go north and south, but we went down the mountain, and went up the mountain. It's okay. And so they took me there. As a matter of fact, we had the opportunity for tickets because my friend at Numa Cloudy's dad, the older brother, works with setting up sound stages for big productions. And he is a personal friend of several people, including the former president of Mexico. He's the tall guy with the mustache. I can't think of his name. But anyway, like many of the others in American Educating, he's a very personal friend of Placido Domingo. And every time Placido has a concert, he sets up. So we had tickets. All we had to do was fly down there. And we didn't have any money. I was there. It was this year. And she said, when you come back in a month or 2 months, and this is where the concert is. And then Mundo will have tickets for you up front. And I wanted to go. But, that's life. Anyway, this is an ancient city. It was a lowland city, so we know that it coincides with the later time for the most part. Because they have those markets and things. In the center, they have the pyramid with four sides, which, of course, in mathematics is impossible. Because they have three. But what we call pyramids, and this is the one where in the spring equinox, the sun shines in such a way that down the stairs there will be a moving serpent. As you watch, you can see the shadow, and it hits the stairs in just such a way that it does it. So, and the serpent, of course, represents Quetzalcoatl, which also is another strange thing because it's all mixed together with Kukulkan, the jaguar, and then Quetzalcoatl. They're kind of one of the same, different representations. There's maybe two again. And so we did a little visit. This is where the concert was held for Placido Domingo. We could have had seats right there to go see. But that's okay. And this is the back. That was the back here. I'm going back again. I'm going to kind of hurry. There's a stairway. You get a little bit of an idea of the side. You can't climb it anymore. People used to be able to, but these things deteriorate. And you see on the side, you see that the inscriptions and things which are carved in the stones. And I guess my point is here, can you see the design in there? Pretty faded, isn't it? We're very fortunate that John Stevens and Cather. I can't think of his first name. John Stevens, and I started to say Willa Cather, and that's not it. But they explored in the 1840s the Yucatan Peninsula in particular, and a little bit into the Isthmus area, and Catherwood. John. Okay, and he said, and what they did is he made drawings. Catherwood made drawings of these pyramids. And we're very fortunate because as we see the deterioration of the things in these civilizations, all we have are pieces left. A lot of the places, for example, these columns, the columns have been reconstructed. When you see the little stones in there, that's reconstruction. They saw them, they figured out where they went, and they rebuilt. And they did with some of the same, like these structures here. And once again, you can't climb up in those anymore. But these are Book of Mormon lands. They're for the later parts of the civilization. And some portions of this, and most of it is probably actually built after the time of Book of Mormon. The Mercado is the marketplace. So again, they don't really even know that. They say, it's just the marketplace. And the archaeologists go in and they designate that this is, and then later on somebody makes another study and says, that wasn't the marketplace, that was this. So the knowledge is imperfect. I'm trying to get to some of the other inscriptions. These are the vapor baths, the steam baths. And that was a very common thing. Why in the tropics do you have to have that? Well, actually, this is rather desert area. This is a desert. When it rains in torrents. And then it disappears for 6 months, and everything turns dry. But that's the entrance that the young man is going into. There's the entrance to the steam bath. And there's Omad. And there's somebody taking steam bath. And we did take steam baths, just walking around. I'm sorry? Yeah, we're doing it. And trying to get to some of the other structures. Can you kind of see up there on the top? Well, okay, now you see some of the inscriptions inside. And once again, you see these are actually fairly clear compared to some of the others. And once again, we see the plumage. And probably, once again, represents Quetzalcoatl. I have to admit, I don't know on this one. I wanted to get, okay, here's some columns. There are speech symbols in there. For example, up here, if you know what it is, it's like a cartoon. And the Teotihuacan, they have a whole wall, which is very interesting. It shows the conceptualization of heaven. And it has little speech symbols that come out of it. Of course, we can't read what it says. They've done a lot of interpreting, and they feel that they have deciphered a lot of the Mayan language. But they're, again, they think they have. I think we'll find a lot more. I think some of you have heard, if you're not, at the Yakshidan, they have found a lintel that has the name Buluk on it. And interesting little thing. Little things like that come to light more and more and more. Those are good testimonies. It doesn't prove anything, but it's a good aha. That's nice to know. I was going to show a few more of just some of the walls, and then I'm going to go to the next thing and I'll show you.
Question, Dave.
Yes.
The men that made the study in the early 1800s, were they able to copy the inscriptions so that we know what the inscriptions said?
We know what the inscriptions look like, and that was what I was going to show you. Is, for example, the ones that you saw faded there. They don't know what the meanings were. They had no idea. But if you look at the side wall, look at the condition of that wall now. You can tell that. There's a lot of fading, a lot of damage, weathering, destruction from looters. We used to take pieces of things off the wall. We used to do that same thing. We didn't take them off the wall, but we picked them up off the ground. Wayne Simmons used to take us every year to go. Every time we were down there, let's go scrounging and get through there and pick up dowel heads, and I have some at home. But, anyway, ridiculous. I can't think.
Well, you made a statement about something. They found a something with this word on it, and that meant something, but I don't know what it was that you were talking about.
There's a real belief within the church that Yakshidan was the city of Zarahemla. And that's where it was. And once again, in the Book of Mormon, they talk about, we went north. We went up, we went down. Most people who read maps north, if you go up, you go north. You go down, you go south.
Well, in South America, it'd be the opposite. Well, the reason we think the north is up is because the rivers flow south.
That's right.
In America, the rivers flow north, so south would be
that's
up.
That's right. and so, you know, there's perception there that we all need to have. And that's part of what I'm trying to make sure that you all understand. Because people are going to tell you all kinds of things. Oh, did you know this? Did you know that? And you don't. And this is another part of that perception thing. This is the cenote. This is the holy well. It's called the Cenote Sagrado. The history of it that I always read about was they would take them up to this platform right here, and then they would take the young virgins and tie their hands and their ankles, and then they would throw them in there as a sacrifice. I've read stories like that. I even read them to my kid. I used them as reading materials for teaching Spanish. I believe that while we go there and study the history, most of the bodies and the skulls and things and the skeletons they found down in there, they determined a lot of them they just found in. They had nothing to do. A lot of the stories about sacrifices in different cultures are not totally true. Some are. Most of those are later civilizations. The ancient civilizations have very little evidence to show that there was any sacrificial offerings made. Now, you get up into the Aztec times, there are records, and the one I remember the most was, because if we used to say the Mayas didn't do sacrifices, or the Mayas, they did. One of the things they did was they would take the victim, usually an enemy, and they would flay them alive. They would skin the body and dance in the body.
Yeah. My wife can't feel.
I'm sorry. But they became an atrocious people. Think of our culture today, about how people are getting. And that you see that same thing happening in our own culture, of people sacrificing children, that's it. And they do. Anyway. this is another day, and I think we're about through this part. This is the eagle and jaguar platform. Those, of course, are the deities. And I guess this one's a fairly good one to show you some of the relief on the sides. I can't interpret all of these things, and there again, you see, it's not totally clear. That's why we're thankful to the category for having drawn these so that they can go back to them and say, how this is what it looks like. And that's the pictures that I showed you in the book. Those are drawings that are recreations of what these, they think, look like at that time, based on a lot of that information. So we have to be thankful for what we have. The last thing that was kind of interesting was a game. Well, that's out in the middle again. This is the Gran Juego de Pelota. This is the ball court. And some of you have heard about that they play the ball game. And this is the court. This is the whole court. From this side to this side, they have high walls. And some of them, especially one down at Xochicalco, south of Mexico City, it has these inclined areas right here. It looks like stadium. You say, oh, that's where they sit. No, that was part of the playing field. And then in the slanted area, they would actually run up the slanted area, and they weren't supposed to touch with their hands, like soccer, and they used their hips, and they didn't have protectors on their hips, and they were supposed to hit the ball mostly with the hips. Now, keep that in mind, only hitting it with their hips, and they had to get it to the ring I'm going to show you in a minute. Right there.
Oh,
right there, not that high. The rubber ball was probably about this round. And it was hard. And there were cultures at different times. I don't think they did that at Xochicalco. They may have done it in the later periods here, that when they did do some sacrificing, then they would sacrifice, you know, the losing team. And so there was some viciousness. And that's what the Spaniards saw. And that actually led down, well, I don't want to get too much of that history, but I'll do it real quickly. The Cortez's men were actually slaughtered while he was away. They were guarding Mexico City, and they were slaughtered. And they, what they called the Noche Triste, where they had to leave. And they had to because they saw the sacrifices that were being made, and they were so upset by it. They attacked the people who were sacrificing them. And then, of course, when the Aztecs turned on them, and there were a lot less Spaniards than there were Aztecs. And that was in the Kids' Catholic City of Tenochtitlan. But the ark is there to be interpreted. Do you know who that is? Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent. Representation, perhaps, referred to as Jesus Christ. Walport, and I think that's pretty well there. That's interesting, and it's good. Oh, there's Crane. He was right above my head as I walked through the doorway. Of course, for them, that's supper. Okay. Questions now before I go on to the next. Oh, I just did that again. Never mind. I was kind of taken with this idea, and I hope somebody will remind me of on time. Because my watch is off. I was fortunate in 2014 in spring when it came to us. Well, I can't find it. I can't make my screen any bigger, I'm sorry. Alright, I have to search again. I was fortunate, I got kind of caught up with the idea that this was coming on, and was there any meaning behind it? So, I got out and I took pictures, and I enjoyed, you know, being able to do it. And so I got my pictures. In fact, my first pictures were better than Frank's. He looked at mine and he said, oh, I didn't get any pictures. Because he lives in the city. I live in the country. But this last one, we lived in the woods, and it was lower in the sky. So I didn't get that one. Well, anyway, I did this because I thought it still, there were some things that came together as I looked at this and looked at this and looked at this. And it says signs. And I said, okay. In Job 2:31, the sun shall turn into darkness and the moon into blood, and before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. Oops, not a slideshow. There's been some heightening stuff since Mark Blitz and the Messianic Jew and leader of El Shaddai Ministry saw this over and saw the totally lunar eclipse over the Temple Mount in Jerusalem in February 2008. So he took a picture, and that's what it looked like. And that sparked a lot of interest. He wrote a book, and I'm sure he's made money on it. Then John Hagee later on picked it up, and he wrote a book. But he was impressed with that, and it impressed upon him that particular scripture. Okay, that's not the only place you read that. Now, I want us all to be aware, lest we forget, you know, that the master records of that day and hour, knoweth not man, nor not the angels of the heaven, but my Father only. But he also says, watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh. He didn't say you didn't know the year. But you don't know the hour, you don't know the day.
I was just wondering if that is the first time they've seen a blood moon, or...
Oh, no, no, no. Okay. Blood moons have been around in that, and that's what we'll show you right now. No, it's not a new thing under the sun, but the aspects I'll show you, I hope, will make you aware that there could be something on the horizon more than what we've seen before. Disciples, of course, were admonished to look for his return in generation of the times of Gentiles before. Well, there'll be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift your heads. I know you all probably know that scripture. Watch, therefore, for you know not the day and the hour, so you're supposed to watch. Now, we know that we don't want to look for signs. Who looks for signs? I want to say the evil and adulterous generation, but that's not the scripture. I can't think of it.
Are you referring to when the Pharisees were challenging Jesus? And
he yes.
Said, what sign will you show us?
Yes, yes.
Okay, but I don't think it's wrong to be looking for these signs that are going to come. That's why God created the heavens and the earth. But, you know, the stars would be signs, and that's what's in Genesis.
And I think Brother Jim's going to say what I was going to say, but he might say it more.
I was just going to say there's a difference between being a sign seeker and seeking signs
right.
To testify of things of God.
we don't worship the signs. It's very much like images to me. Do we have images in our lives that mean things to us? Do Christians use a fish? Do we look to the cross? But we don't worship the thing. We worship the God that made it. Do the Jews have feast days? Do they worship the feast day? I think some do. Should they? No. Worship the God that gives you the feast day to remember. That's what that is. They're days of remembrance.
So worship the lawmaker, not the law.
There you go. Yeah, so, very, very well said. Worship the lawmaker, not the law. So we're told to be aware. And he says in Acts again, repeating, that on my servants and on my enemies, I'll pour out these days of my spirit, and they shall prophesy. And I will show wonders in heaven above, and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor and smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood before the great and notable day of the Lord to come. That's in Acts. We are told that some will know. Surely the God, the Lord God, will not do nothing until we reveal. Reveal it the secret and new servants the prophets. We believe in prophets, we believe in prophecy. So we believe that there is a time. Why are we going to be told? To save me? No. To help them. There must be a sign that all can see. Now this I get a lot from my son. You see, they do a lot of star study. And he said, all the signs must be something that mankind be able to know so they're comfortable. And Revelation something, and I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, and the angel asked the gospel preached to them that dwell on the earth. And to every nation and kindred and tongue would be. That's a great life. You know, they can deny our Lord, they can deny Jesus, O Joseph Smith, they can deny the Book of Mormon, they can deny all the little things I showed you earlier about, you know, evidences in this new world that is connected to the old world, the similarities. They can say, well, they can explain that away. But when the heavens explode, they can't deny it. They're going to look up and we pray it's not too late for them or us. The Lord does work in patterns. It says that, you know, Dr. Dunn said, you know, he's a pattern of all things. He may not be destroyed. He doesn't want us to be destroyed. He wants us to know. I beheld when he opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. That's in the sixth seal opening. I'm not a great Revelation studier. I don't know how that fits in. All I know is the scripture is there, and it's another indication. Modern day Revelation, Dr. Cummings. By being the liberty wherein you are made free, and tending not yourselves in sin, but your hands be clean until the Lord come. For not many days hence, and the earth shall tremble and reel to and fro as a drunken man. The sun shall hide his face, and shall refuse to give light, and the moon shall be bathed in blood. And the stars become exceeding angry, and shall cast themselves down to the fig, and fall off the fig tree. How many of you have heard testimonies that the skies will just rain with fire? I don't know. There have been moments like that. You know, that there was one at Halley's Comet back in the early late 1800s. And I don't remember that, but there were meteor showers. You know, people used this at this time to say the Earth was going. Well, not this one, but the other scriptures in the Bible. But that's the end of the world. Well, of course, it didn't happen. And likewise, we will hear him say at the end of this, with everything I've said, I don't hand it down to you and say this is my prophecy. But I think there's prophecy in it, and you'll see that part later. Do you believe me now, you know, when it happens in the sky? So I think, you know, there are all kinds of warnings in the scriptures, and the Lord is going to return and restore the kingdom. There are two aspects for me to scriptural prophecy. Number one, that there's a portent disaster in these things, that something evil is going to happen, okay? So this is the first one we're talking about. And particularly for this prophecy, because it mostly refers to the Hebrew children, then the connection of the blood moons, there's a connection oftentimes with the ninth of Av, which is a day of mourning and sadness for Israel. There are many times that they think, they don't know all the connections. There's a belief among the Jewish people that the ninth of Av was when they made the golden calf. And that was where the crusade was from.
When you say Hebrew, in this context, you mean the Jews?
I mean Hebrew.
The whole house.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I do not want to ever become Jewish. It would not be mine. I would like to think I'm becoming Hebrew. Because that refers to everything. And yes, that's another good point that Jim brought out before, is that what we had prior to about 600 B.C., it was around 600 B.C. that the growth of synagogues began. And the synagogue is a Jewish thing. And the temple is a Hebrew thing. The tabernacle is a Hebrew thing. What was in the Hebrew? Well, it's like all things. That was what originally in the garden is pure. That which simply afterwards becomes diluted and becomes tainted. So, for the people of Israel, ninth of all is a sad day. Let's think about some of the negative things that happened to them. Maybe the golden calf incident, which was also at that time because of different calendar, was the 17th of Tammuz, a sad day in the life of Israel. And then there was a return of the spies in the promised land, and the enemy was too strong, and people mourned and cried that they came out of Egypt, and we can't go in, we're going to be slaughtered. And so, what did they have to do? Spend 39 more years, 39 and a half years or more. Most people think that the actual pilgrimage to get to the Jordan River was about 6 months, and they were ready to cross over. They had spent 39 and a half years because they didn't have the faith to go in. In 423 BCE, that's before the Christian era, the first temple of Jerusalem was destroyed on the 9th of August. There was the second temple destroyed in 69 AD on the 9th of August. The Romans pressed the bar low for revolt on the 9th of August. Pope Urban declared the first crusade. You kill thousands of Jews and Arabs too. You know, and many Jewish communities were obliterated at that time. That was on the 9th of August. The Jews were expelled from in England in 1290 on the 9th of August. They were expelled from France on the. It was actually they gave them an extra day. I think. No, that was in Spain. But then in 1492. Columbus didn't set an ocean rule. You know the reason he was able to do that? Spain didn't have any money. They were fighting the Moors. In 1492, Granada fell, and he didn't have to dedicate troops to that anymore. So that's when Columbus had gone to the king several times and asked for funds to go seek the New World, and the response was no. And finally, when Granada fell, the king said, okay, well, the queen get in here. And there's a lot of evidence that the Jews were the ones that financed the trip. And that's a long story. And beyond that, one of the terrible things was that... I won't go into that. That's too long. Sorry. I get sidetracked. So, World War I was declared on the 9th of August, 1914. Hitler enacted the laws, even the Nuremberg laws of the Holocaust, on the 9th of August. Jews were expelled from Warsaw, Poland, not Missouri. The next day, on the 9th of August, they started the gas chambers. 1984. Now, I will say, I need to do something here. Oh, I can't live in this mode. Where it says 1984, I need to bring that down for another number, and I goofed on that. But there was a deadly bomb. As we get to 10, 11, 12, 14. I have a feeling that these people knew when the 9th of Av was, and those things were orchestrated. Now, I don't know that. The others previous to that, I don't know that they would have really known that. And so I have to say that it appears that those things are happening. And of course, then we remember that the Jews remember the 6 million victims of Holocaust on the 9th of August. So it's their day of sadness. So bad things have happened. And those were, I mean, those were in blood moons. There were blood moons at the time. We have blood moons all the time. Yes.
Do you know what our calendar date is for the night of this year?
It's written down.
Sandy's got it written down at home, I believe.
It's all in September.
It's in September. And we'll show you that in a minute. Well, or if we don't show it today, you'll see it tomorrow.
It's got five minutes.
Yeah. It'll be tomorrow. But let me get to aspect two, I think we can do this part. They're associated with disasters, but we all know that that's also our hope. And so there's a prophecy by Rabbi Ben Samuel given in the 13th century, just barely into it, concerning the number of jubilees that Jerusalem would be controlled by the Turks, and then the house of Israel, and then the return to the Messiah. So now we're really in the prophecy. I'm not going to tell. This is a physical process. No, not yet. it's a shadowing that occurs. It's a natural phenomenon in the universe. And it just means that the earth gets in between the sun. And so the rays bend around. And when they bend around, they change their color. See, so it gives a different hue to the light that's on the moon. Because the rays are bent. I don't understand that scientifically. I just know that the light rays are bent. And then they change the color. So you have the earth in the middle. And then there, of course, are eclipses. Now, in 2014, this happened this way. This is where it was visible. It was visible to us. And that's where I got my big picture. But this is moving. And I'm going to tell you that there's conflicting evidence on this from different people. And I had to sift through it some more. There are some who say it's not going to happen. Many said at this time, so what? It doesn't pertain to the Jews? It's not over there. They can't see it. So it's not a thing. It's an improper, it's a fallacious thought from the very beginning. And you and I say what? Where is it seen? Okay, Book of Mormon land. So we say, no, it is to God's people. It's to this particular one. My understanding was that he's moving that way, and these this year are visible in Israel. I've seen on the internet contrary information. I haven't seen it yet. So you may speculate that, but this is just what I said, that there are those who think that it doesn't pertain to us, we say it does. It's significant to Book of Mormon believers. So these things are called tetrads, and I'll stop after I explain the tetrads. But there'll be a series of blood moons that may occur in successive years. And the important thing is they fall on the high Jewish feast days of the spring and the fall. In other words, they fall at Passover and they fall in Rosh Hashanah. Okay? The first and then the last. Now, in between them, in the middle, is a solar eclipse. That it is said that there was one crucifixion, but NASA has no data on that. They have data on all the others, but for some reason they have no data about a solar eclipse at the time of crucifixion, depending on when you think the crucifixion really was.
Okay. Here's a product for a DVD. It was not a Jewish. There was a law professor who took a lot of interest in astronomy all his life. It's called, I think it's the Bethlehem Star, and it's a great DVD. And I thought in that he used some program and went back to the time of the crucifixion.
Yes.
To prove. Okay.
Yes, and that was the Star of Bethlehem. That was in reference to the star. We're talking about a solar eclipse. Why do we think it was a solar eclipse that fit for the crucifixion?
The 3 days of
darkness. Yeah, it was dark. And I think at first there were 3 hours of darkness originally in the biblical land. The important thing is that this is the schedule. Okay? This is 2014 up here. No, I can't do that. Okay.
All right.
This is difficult for me. So on the Passover in 2014, we had a blood moon. In October, we had the Feast of Tabernacles, or Rosh Hashanah, that's all connected together. We had another. And I'm sorry, this is 32-33 AD. And they know that there were blood moons then. They know that we think there was a crucifixion. I mean, there was darkness at the crucifixion. Then, following that, in 33 AD, you had another one of these. This all is called a tetrad, meaning a series of four. But they have to fall on those feast days. How often does that happen? There have been 62 tetrads since the beginning of the century, but only seven of those have been on the feast days that I just showed you. 2014-2015 will be the eighth one. We knew the beginning. These are the ones in the lesson. I'm just giving you a little preview since I'm supposed to quit. But this will show you the ones and what happened in those times. Some of those were good things, some were bad things, but something happened to one. Now, I'll be honest with you. People look through these things. They find a date, they find something happening, and they say, oh, that means this. Quite honestly, people, you can't really say that 100%. But I think it's still important to look at and analyze and use the criteria to make the judgment. So that's another, this is what John Hagee did with setting up, you know, the dates of when they will be. So on the 28th of, well, we have passed, well, not passed, I'm sorry, Sukkot is going to be on the 28th of September, but prior to that we have the Feast of Trumpets, Rosh Hashanah, and that is the 12th or 13th of September. So it starts then. Now, precise dates, precise meaning, but it falls on those feast days for one of those in that time. So there's all kinds of things. I like this one. The sun is a signal to the world. A moon is a signal to Israel. So the solar eclipse is for everybody.
When they say Israel there, they mean...
Oh, yeah.
They, maybe they don't understand, but they're talking
right.
Judah. That's not Israel.
That's true. Jim keeps saying that, but it is important to remember. I guess I assume we all know that, but certainly you're right. The rest of the world, most of the rest of the world, does not understand. Luke records that in the sixth hour the darkness fell over the land until the ninth. So there was 3 hours of darkness. That's a solar eclipse, and that's usually how a solar eclipse does. It's for about 3 hours and then this is over. But there's a lot more, and this is just a preview. Yeah, we'll pick it up tomorrow, so I think we can do that. Because we're going to talk about the prophecy of Rabbi Ben Samuel tomorrow. And otherwise, you will just keep this in your mind. There we go, that blood coming down. Gruesome stuff. And that's easy for people to do. They like to get hooked on, you know, the ethereal, the bloody, the scary, the, you know. Don't go see a scary movie if you want to, but this could be real. This is no movie. These are possibilities. So, if you're minding, I don't know which slide there is, but we'll remember to pick it up every month. Thank you very much.
Yeah.